1 Samuel chapter 24. What is recorded here, of course, is a historical account involving Saul and David. By way of summation, back in chapters 22 and 23, Saul, as you know, was pursuing David. David was a fugitive. But Saul had David and his men cornered. There was no way of escape. But God would send the Philistines back into the land of Israel. Saul would get word that the Philistines were back in the land, ready for war. So Saul was now forced to abandon the fact that he had David and his men cornered. And he had to go and save Israel. So God providentially delivered David. And this is where chapter 24 picks up. Saul is returned home now from defeating the Philistines. And it was told him in verse 1, David is in the wilderness of Engedi. Upon hearing that, in verse 2, Saul took 3,000 men and pursues David. In verse 3, David and his men are hiding in a cave. Saul and his men, by the providence of God, come to the same cave. They're unaware, of course, that David and his men are in the cave. Saul decides that he needs a nap, goes into the cave to take a nap. God in His sovereignty caused Saul and his men not to notice David and his men who were in the same cave. In verse 4, while Saul was sleeping, the men of David tried to convince David that this was an opportunity from God to kill Saul. But David, holding to the teachings of Scripture, would not. But instead, what he did was he cut off the skirt of Saul's robe. Then in verses 5 through 7, David was convicted by what he had done. And he would persuade his men not to kill Saul. Saul, of course, would awake from his nap. He would start to head out of the cave, not knowing what had transpired. And in verses 8 through 12, David follows Saul, and he says unto him, "Where did you hear that I seek to hurt you?" And then he proceeded to tell Saul what had just transpired in the cave, how he could have killed him. In verse 13, David makes reference to a proverb. He says, "Wickedness proceedeth from the wicked." That is, as a man is, so are his actions. What he's doing, he's calling Saul a wicked individual. And then David would make reference to himself to show Saul that he had no maliciousness in his heart toward him. And we see that was, of course, evidenced by the fact when he had a chance to kill him, he didn't. Then in verse 14, David, in an attempt to show Saul the foolishness of his ways, asked him, "And who is the king of Israel? Come out. And whom dost thou pursue? After a dead dog? After a flea?" Now from this whole account, there are many, many valuable lessons that can be drawn. There's certainly the lesson of God's sovereignty, God's wise providence, His care, His protection of His own. There are also many life lessons that can be learned from David. For example, there's the importance of a tender conscience toward God. His conscience convicted him about cutting the robe of Saul. There's also a lesson about staying true to God regardless of appearances, and how to love our enemies. And there's also the lesson, of course, of humility and many others. But in this message, we want to take our thought from verse 14. And what we read here is a timeless picture. After whom is the king of Israel come out? After whom dost thou pursue? After a dead dog? After a flea? It's a timeless picture of greatness vanquished by petty pursuits. What we read here is really a tragedy of epical proportions. What we read here is something that we have all done and may be doing, something that we are prone to do. What we read here serves as a warning. I want to speak this morning on chasing fleas. Now, we preached a message like this probably 12, 13 years ago. We've lost that message in the fire, but we want to preach upon this subject again. If I remember right, back then we stressed how we chase fleas in our thoughts. That's certainly included in this message, but we're not going to dwell upon that. What we want to do today is simply look at this act of Saul and then make brief application to ourselves. But consider first of all what Saul was doing here. Saul is introduced to us way back in 1 Samuel chapter 9. And it's said back there in verse 2 that he was a man above men. He was very kingly in his appearance. There was no one more impressive among all the Israelites than Saul. Saul, of course, would be anointed king. And just looking at Saul, you would anticipate a great career as a king. He'll be a great king. Just looking at him, you would anticipate that. But in the process of time, after Saul is king, Israel and the Philistines would go to war. We know that David would defeat the Philistines' mightiest warrior, Goliath. And David became a national hero. 1 Samuel 18, verses 6 and 7. And this absolutely enraged Saul. We see that in 1 Samuel 18, verse 8. So now Saul has a heart problem. And really, this is where his flea chasing begins. He would spend the rest of his time chasing a flea. It was based upon an assumption. 1 Samuel 18 and verse 8. Saul drew the conclusion, since David is getting all this praise, what can he have more but the kingdom? He's trying to take my kingdom. He's trying to usurp me. He made an assumption. We read in 1 Samuel 18, verse 9, and Saul eyed David from that day forward. From the day he made that assumption, his attention, his focus is upon David. His whole life is now based upon and is defined by his anger, his envy, and an assumption. And that would define the rest of his life. That's sad. And Saul's not the only one. It happens all the time. So now killing David absolutely consumes Saul. In reality, Saul's obsession with David was the result of an obsession with himself. You see, Saul was so self-involved that his hurt feelings became the driving force and the defining point of his life. Now, that's self-involved. So it's not just an obsession with David. It begins with an obsession. My feelings are hurt. David's getting more credit than me. And I believe that David is going to try to take over my kingdom. In 1 Samuel 18, verses 10 and 11, we read of Saul's first two attempts to kill David. You know, people will preach and they'll say, well, Saul was the worst javelin thrower in the history of Israel. That's not true. God was the one who directed those javelins. It was God protecting David. But Saul's feeling of being slighted and his hurt feelings and his envy and his bitterness caused him to become something that he wasn't before. Notice in 1 Samuel 18, verse 12, and Saul was afraid of David. Saul was afraid of David. Verse 15, last part of the verse says, he was afraid of him. And this feeling of fear increased. Notice verse 28 and 29. And Saul saw and knew that the Lord was with David, and then Michal, Saul's daughter, loved him, and Saul was yet more afraid. So his fear is growing. He became more afraid of David, and Saul became David's enemy. And he did this continually. So now this thing is beginning to define not only his day, it's beginning to define his life. And there would be a perpetual pursuit of David. Notice in 1 Samuel 19, verse 2. About midway through that verse, we see Jonathan saying to David, Saul, my father, seeketh to kill thee. Saul, my father, seeketh to kill thee. In verse 10, and Saul sought to smite David. In verse 11, so Saul sent messengers. He's involving others now. Saul sent messengers unto David's house to watch him and to slay him in the morning. In verse 15, he again says, bring him up to me in the bed that I may slay him. He's obsessed with David. And we see it again in verse 20. He sends out more messengers to slay David. This was his intent. And in 1 Samuel 23:23, we hear Saul say, I will search him. I will search him out throughout all the thousands of Judah. If it's the last thing I do, I will kill David. His life is now defined by his hatred of David. And it all began with hurt feelings and assumption. That's where it all began. So Saul's feeling of being slighted changed the direction and course of his whole life. That's sad. Saul was the king of Israel. And as the king, there were many, many important and crucial matters that demanded and were worthy of his attention. And without a doubt, for the good of the kingdom, there were matters that were absolutely necessary for him to attend to. There were important decisions for Saul to make for the good of the kingdom. There were issues that Saul must face for the good of the kingdom. And be sure of this, David was not one of them. But now he's put his whole life in killing David. This becomes the defining issue of his life. And every time Saul would hear of David's whereabouts, off he went. Off he went to pursue him. And here in 1 Samuel 24 and verse 1, Saul has returned home. He's been victorious in battle over the Philistines, but he's unable to enjoy the success of the victory for very long. And here's why. Someone would come to Saul and said, "Saul, David is in the wilderness of Engedi." That's all Saul had to hear. David's out there. He now can no longer enjoy the victory. David's out there. And he gathers 3,000 men. Again, it would be bad enough if Saul just limited his pursuit to himself and ruin his own life, but he involves others. People that chase fleas always do that. They're not content with chasing fleas just by themselves. They'll involve others. And that's what Saul is doing. So all he hears is David is out there. And that sets him in motion. David was not the most important and crucial matter in Saul's life. But Saul made it the most important and crucial matter in his life. You and I better be careful what we make the most important and crucial matter in our lives. It may ruin you. Saul was, in fact, that's what Saul was doing. He was bringing misery and anxiety and ruin into his life. Saul, the king of Israel, a man who wore garments of royalty, a man who wore a crown, a man who sat on a throne, a man who held a scepter, a man who had an army at his command, a man who had the responsibility of a kingdom, a man who had kingly matters that demanded his attention, is now obsessed with what does not matter. He's obsessed with it. The things that should have been Saul's main desire, the things that should have been Saul's main ambitions, were swallowed up by this obsession that he has. The things that should have been Saul's primary devotion became secondary due to this obsession that he has. The things that should have been his main obligation, no longer the case because of this obsession. What you have here is a king prostituting his authority to accomplish selfish ends. It is a picture of wasting a vast amount of energy upon the trivial. It is a picture of one dishonoring himself with what doesn't matter. And again, it's a terribly sad picture. Now, you and I can imagine someone in the kingdom might say, "Where's King Saul today? Where's the king? I haven't seen him today." And if the person would answer honestly, they would say, "Well, he's out chasing a flea. He's out chasing a flea." Which might bring the response, "Well, doesn't he have better things to do? Aren't there more important matters to attend to? Does he not have a kingdom to run? You mean to tell me he's out chasing a flea?" That's exactly what he was doing. In verse 14, David is trying to convince Saul of how preposterous and unreasonable and illogical it is for Saul to be spending valuable time and resources pursuing David. He is rebuking Saul. He is really belittling Saul. He's saying, Saul, you're a king. And you're chasing fleas. He's belittling him. There's something senseless about that, what Saul was doing. There's something very foolish. There's something absurd. There's something insane about a king spending his time, spending his resources, chasing a flea. David is, in verse 14, is telling Saul, really with a tone of disbelief and shock. He's saying, Saul, you're playing the role of a court jester. You're a fool. Your life is now defined by pursuing me. Who am I? I'm just a flea. I'm just a very little thing. You see, Saul had lost his focus upon what really mattered. Saul had lost all sense of what was really important. And he's wasting his energy. He's wasting his resources. He's wasting his time chasing a flea. And all the time he's doing this, he's weakening himself. And he's exposing himself and others, his whole kingdom, to the danger of attack from enemies because he's obsessed with what doesn't matter. Chasing a flea. He's wasting time. He's wasting opportunities. He's wasting potential. He's wasting his life. Chasing a flea. He's obsessed with David. This, of course, would cause him much restlessness, cause him much anxiety and turmoil. We bring a lot of restlessness into our lives because we go flea chasing. We bring a lot of anxiety and turmoil into our lives. And you know what we usually blame it on? The flea. Saul had convinced himself that David was something more worthy of his time and energy than what really mattered. No doubt Saul would have accomplished more. He would have been more useful as a king. He would have amounted to more. He would have obtained more. He could have been more of a positive influence. No doubt he could have been happier had he not spent his days chasing a flea. Again, read verse 14. And there is a tone of shock and amazement over this fact that flea chasing had become Saul's life. I've known people through the year, they've spent all their life chasing fleas. That's all they do. That's all they do. They're of little use. They've lost many blessings in life. Their life is miserable. Their life is defined by chasing fleas. So in the text, David is saying, Saul, you're the king, and you've become nothing more than a flea chaser. That's your life. You're a flea chaser. And again, there's something tragic about that. There's something pathetic. There's something shameful. Now think about a flea. We're told, I don't know, but we're told that there are several species of flea. We do know this. Whatever the species, they're all small. They're all small. So with regard to their size, a flea is very insignificant. So David is rebuking Saul for the foolishness of focusing upon insignificant matters, missing what is most important. However many species of flea there are, once again, it doesn't matter. They all bite. They all bite. And their bite causes itching, which leads to much scratching. That's misery. And Saul spent his time chasing that which is only going to be an irritant in his life. Chasing that which will only bring pain and misery into his life. Fleas in our text speak of or represent worldly distractions, foolish pursuits. And again, Saul is a picture of opportunity and potential being wasted. Why? He's obsessed with a flea. So let's make application to ourselves. It's something we are prone to do. It's sad, but it's true. We are prone to ruin a whole day chasing a flea. We're prone to do that. We've all done it. Some are here right now, I guarantee, that are doing it right now. But flea chasing is a trap to avoid. It's one of Satan's greatest traps. Again, a flea is a very little thing. But the people who chase them, they're enormous. It's the biggest thing in life. It's a little bitty thing. But it's so large in their mind, that's all they can see. That flea. Becomes enormous. A flea is insignificant in the big picture. But to those who chase them, it's the most significant thing that there is. You know, you think about ambulance chasers, storm chasers, ghost chasers. And those folks are somewhat rare. Most would consider them a bit odd. But as strange as it is to chase fleas, flea chasers are everywhere. They're everywhere. You might say, well, a person who chases storms, they're nuts. Well, what about a person who chases fleas? Who's more crazy? But flea chasers are everywhere. Fleas are everywhere. They're everywhere. Our lives are infested with fleas. You can chase fleas in the pursuits of life. You can chase fleas in your thoughts. And again, we spent most of our time, I believe, last time. You can come into the house of God. Somebody does something, somebody doesn't do something. Somebody says something, somebody doesn't say something. It upsets you. You sit down, you try to listen to preaching, but there's a flea in your mind, and you're just going round and round and round. And you chase that thing all through the service, and you go outside, you chase it some more, then you get on the phone, and you get some others chasing it. We do that. And people have spent their whole life doing that. And they can spot a flea from a mile away. There it is. And off they go. I would define that as insanity. I mean, that's absolutely crazy. To spend even an hour chasing a flea is you've lost your mind. But to spend a day, and then a week, and then a month, and then a year, and then a decade, and on it goes. How tragic. You can chase fleas in church. Why? Because they're here. There's fleas everywhere. Things that don't matter. You can chase fleas in your home. You can chase fleas in your marriage. You can chase fleas on your job. The truth is, everywhere you go, there are fleas. And you and I can chase them. And we do. And Satan is an expert at getting us to chase fleas. He delights in seeing God's people just go round and round and round chasing a flea. And it's a worthless pursuit. I mean, what are you going to do with a flea if you catch it? It's a worthless pursuit. You might as well chase the wind. It's an endless pursuit. Fleas, according to what I read, can live up to 2 years. That's 730 days. And during that time, they lay about 50 eggs a day. So let's say a flea lives 2 years, lays 50 eggs a day. That's 36,500 more fleas. And then those fleas do the same thing. That is an endless pursuit. Chasing fleas. In other words, fleas multiply. And those who make a habit of chasing fleas, it is a never-ending pursuit. Fleas are bloodsuckers. And those who make a habit of chasing fleas will have spirituality sucked right out of them. You can't remain spiritual and chase fleas for very long. They chase fleas in church. They chase fleas at home. They chase fleas in their various relationships in life. And the flea becomes bigger and bigger and bigger. And it begins to consume them. And it becomes more important than anything else. And it becomes the main thing. It is now the main thing in life. And lives are filled with turmoil and anxiety and annoyance and exasperation. And while all that is going on, wonderful and worthwhile things are missed. They're missed. And the frivolous becomes the main thing. And attitudes become poisoned. And many foolish and hurtful decisions and choices are made. How foolish to chase fleas. How foolish. Now there is an alternative. We that are saved are the recipients of the greatest, most wonderful, and marvelous miracle that there is. We are resurrection, transformation miracles of God, monuments of God's amazing grace. As foolish as it is for a king to chase a flea, how foolish for the sons and daughters of God to go flea chasing. The heirs of God, the joint heirs with Jesus Christ, partakers of Christ, how foolish. What a colossal waste for that individual to chase fleas. We've been clothed in the righteousness of Christ. We're citizens of heaven. We've been brought into all the blessings of salvation. We have all sufficiency in all things. And our lives are to be to the praise and the glory of the one who saved our soul. Our lives are to manifest Christ. We are to live lives of faith, holiness, obedience. We are to live lives of victory. Our lives are to be filled with enthusiasm and joy and thanksgiving. Do not allow the fleas of life to rob you of what is yours. But we do. We do it all the time. And though we live in a world that is sinful, wicked, and twisted, and corrupt, and depraved, a world where Satan walketh about seeking whom he may devour, and though there are numerous needs in our own lives, and there are many burdens and difficulties and sorrows and trials in our lives and pressures and storms and temptations, don't chase fleas, but pursue God. Pursue the Lord. No matter what else is going on in your life, no matter what you feel, no matter how badly your feelings have been hurt, get over it and pursue God. Pursue the Lord. Well, you don't understand. No, you don't understand. You are ruining your life chasing fleas. Always move in the direction of God. That will keep us from chasing fleas. This I know. Every single time I go chasing after a flea, I have now moved in the opposite direction of God. That's not what God would have me to do. Chase a flea. Move in the direction of the Lord. Have this conviction. God is better and more important than anything else in my life. And I am going to pursue Him. I am going to have a personal determination for God. I'm not going to let anybody or anything distract or pull me away from God or from the spiritual. That needs to be our determination. Realize that the one who saved our hell-deserving soul, He is to be the primary devotion of our life. He is our main obligation. He is our priority. Do not allow some flea to change the direction of your life, to change the course of your life. Do not allow fleas to become your life. You know, if God's people were honest and someone would ask them, what do you do? If they were really honest, they would say, I'm a flea chaser. That's what I spend most of my time doing. I'm at work, that's what I'm doing. I'm at church, that's what I'm doing. I'm at home, that's what I'm doing. I'm a flea chaser. People aren't honest enough to come right out and say, I'm a flea chaser. How sad. So how do we avoid chasing fleas? Well, we have to maintain an appetite, a yearning, a heart, a preference, an attraction to God. Not to be attracted to fleas. We're having an obsession with God. Pursue God, not fleas. I'm more than a conqueror through Him that loves me. And He's given me a marvelous life to live. And I have a place prepared in glory, a glorious future. On our way to being forever with the Lord, why should I allow my life to be defined by fleas? How sad. God help us not to go chasing fleas. We all do it. We all do it. All it takes is for somebody to say something or not say something that we thought they should have said, and we'll chase that flea the rest of the day. We need to realize as soon as we start doing that, stop. Well, it's not that easy. I understand that. But you still have to have the mindset, this has got to stop. I can't spend my day chasing this flea. I can't do that because I'm going to miss many blessings along the way. So again, we would all be in agreement that for a king to chase a flea, how foolish. How foolish. But for a child of God, you're higher than a king, an earthly king, sons and daughters of God. How foolish for the sons and daughters of God to spend a day, even an hour, chasing a flea. We need to be aware of what we're prone to do, and we're all prone to this. It's in our nature. We need to be aware of it, and we need to ask God to help us. Pursue God. Pursue God. Keep moving in the direction of God. No matter what help happens in your life, it does not matter. Pursue God. That's the solution. Pursue God. Every decision you make, pursue God. Every choice you're faced with, pursue God. You cannot go wrong pursuing the Lord. But you will waste your life pursuing a flea. Brother Larry, if you'd come and lead us in verse song. Let's all stand.